Hi, and welcome to episode 61 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mass from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to cause havoc in the world of indie comics this week are writer, artist and creator of the kick-ass superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
I'm back, hello.
Back.
Good to be back.
Like Slim Shady, he's back. Hopefully he's, without the addiction to painkillers. And just like Dan Butcher, we're also joined by one of the only men worthy of lifting Mjolnir. It's Tony Esmond.
That's what Matt Harrower calls his penis. That is a genuine story. I'm calling him out. It is what he calls it.
That's a great name.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's good to be here. It's good to have you back, Dan.
Thank you. Good to be back. Has anyone got any pet names for their genitals? How are we doing it?
Not at the moment. Let's all think of one as the show goes on.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And then we'll just drop that sort of pop quiz question on the individual as the show goes on.
Okay. Yeah. Give me a chance. I've got to think of something.
Oh God. Here we go. Anyway. As you can tell, there's no guest of this week, folks.
Starblazer.
Yes.
I haven't asked you yet. Although that is pretty fucking spectacular. Now, as you can see, folks, there's no guest, but the Three Musketeers are here to talk absolute crap and rant about stuff, as always.
Yep.
It's been a long time coming. There's been a few shows with some fantastic guests recently.
Yep.
Both informative, hilarious, and wonderful, so thank you, everyone.
Laura was good last week, wasn't she?
She was brilliant.
Really good, yeah. Yeah. Like her.
Very good indeed. As we record this, it's just a few days away from the Mighty Melksham Comic Con, but by the time you hear it, that will have already happened. Now, if that hasn't given you a nosebleed, I don't know what will.
And I apologise in advance.
Yeah.
I really look forward to insert name there. I really enjoyed meeting...
Inserting who?
Insert name.
Hello.
Dan really looks forward to inserting you.
Are you glad you're back, Dan?
Always. Yes. It's a pleasure.
But no, we've got a couple of subjects to talk about this week. One that we gave a shout out. We're recording early, so thank you to all the people who responded to our shout out about our subject, which we'll tell you about in a moment. We're going to be riffing off that like mother fudgers, aren't we?
Yammers.
Yeah.
The Starblazer thing still echoing in my head. And much like our opinion of that, there'll be plenty of other opinions to add to the brilliant ones we received from all you lovely people. But before that, do you want to talk about some books, or is there anything in particular that you want to bring up? Come on, it's just us three in a dark room hugging
you
each other.
You want to mention something, didn't you, Daniel?
Did I?
You want to talk about Comixology or something?
Oh, yes. Comixology. I've got several of the issues of Vanguard on Comixology, and I got a check through from them for some earnings because they pay out quarterly, and the check was made out to my comic publishing name on Comixology. Obviously, I can't take that to the bank and check and cash that because it's not recognised. So what you got to do is go to your payment settings on Comixology and check that you haven't ticked the box that says use my publisher details. Because I don't know about you, I'm registered under my name for tax purposes. So it's got to come to me. If you uncheck it, you can fill in your details and it'll make the check out to that, not to your company. Because obviously I made up just a fictitious company because I presume that's what you needed to do to have a book on Comixology. So make sure you check that. Otherwise, you'll get money through to, or you'll get a check that you can't cash. So I've had to contact their finance department and try and get it cancelled and reissued, which is a bit of a ball ache. So check that.
Yeah, drop in knowledge and very important, a very important knowledge. I don't have
to
worry about
your settings.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever receive a check from Comixology.
I was kind of surprised I got the email like my sales, and I was like, wow, it did pretty well because before then I wasn't kind of...
Rightfully so, Dan, rightfully so.
Oh, thank you.
Man, yeah. Yeah, very good.
Wow, sales are picking up.
Nice one.
So well, you've got a substantial amount of issues now, haven't you? So if anyone discovers it now, they can go back and order the back catalogue quite easy with a couple of clicks, can't they? So that must help.
I've just put in 10 for its paces now just with the editor to kind of... I do a bit of arse around face. I put it on the web and then the editor looks it over when I print it. So the web one's littered with errors.
Really? Well, I never would have guessed because you're on fire at the moment with the new one.
Oh, thank you. It's weird you mentioned that in the last show about like going through that lull when you're like, oh, fuck's sake. I'm well into that lull.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So breakthrough. I'm halfway through an issue, so I'm kind of like, oh.
It's so good to know that everyone else experiences it, you know, because we've all got this massive passion for creating comic books, and when we have the finished products, they're amazing. But it is hard work, and it is, you know, and any creative person has a moment of self doubt, apart from Tony Esmond because he knows how good he is.
Thank you. But I'll send you a picture on the WhatsApp.
Oh, not again! Not another egghead. But
Starblazer.
Not a picture of Starblazer. I'd like to point that out. It's just the word Starblazer
tattooed along the side, like it's the Memphis Bell. I just realised how funny that pun was. Now, if you have one of these peaks and troughs, then just keep going, folks, because sometimes they can be quite crippling, I think. Don't you think, Dan?
Yeah, I took advice from Mark Lamin when he put it up on, I might have mentioned it on the show before, but he put it on Twitter essentially saying that when you're kind of doing this at a level, you can't have off days, you've just got to get on with it and keep plugging away. And that's essentially what you got to do, just kind of keep doing it, really.
Because he's constantly working, isn't he? So it is like, you know, you just got to get to the next page, next page. You can't stop and worry about things. You know.
I mean, obviously Mark's a professional, but it's a good attitude, I believe, and way to do it.
When you say professional, you don't mean he rents his body out for money.
I can't comment.
We can't say anything about that.
He's a professional in many ways, let's say that.
He is. And I want to give a shout out to him for posting the Black Sad sort of sketch book type thing that he... I need to find that somehow. That isn't going to cost me a load of arm and a leg, but that looks amazing.
Yeah, I looked up a Korean illustrator. I've been seeing a few stuff online, and it's like £1,200 for the sketchbook. Ah, that's all right.
Yeah.
I look at the JPEGs online.
I bought, you know, those little mini A5 sketchbooks that some artists do. I know Mark does them, and you know, there's a few people who do them, don't there? And at New York, I won't name the artist, but he's not a huge name in the comics world. And I went out and said, oh, I'll have one of these. How much are these? And they're usually like, you know, 10, 15 quid at the most. And he went, $70. I mean this sketchbook here. And I thought, has it got original sketches in it or something?
Because
the unit cost on that's like fucking, what, a few dollars to get it printed?
Yeah.
Was it hardback? Was it full colour?
No. Just the same as, you know, those sketchbooks that, you know, everyone does. And I said, this. And he went, yeah. And it wasn't even him talking to me. It was his son. And he had his back to me.
You know what it is. The son's trying to make a few quid on the side. That's what he's doing. Yeah. They probably only cost about $5, but the son wants to make that markup, doesn't he?
He's mugging me right off.
Son's a grifter.
You got it anyway, though, didn't you, Tony?
I stole it. I punched the old bloke in the face and legged it.
Then came back for the book, punched the sun, and then ran off again.
Yeah. Then I did a moon.
Oh, that's what a lot of people call the Esmond.
Yeah. Chad, eat me, Tracer, and I licked it.
Oh, dear. So there you go. There was a bit of knowledge followed by a bunch of nonsense. But let's get on with the rest of the show, shall we? Do we have any books to talk about, Tony?
Yes, I'm going to talk about a book that was a gift to me from Mr. Imber. Very kindly, I got a little package of stuff from Mr. Imber, as we talked about last week.
That's Chris Imber of Reckless Hero.
That's the one. And he sent me Signal by Paul Duffield. Have you guys seen it?
I have it.
No.
I picked up at Melksham a couple of years ago, and I will say it's amazing, and then I will leave the rest to you, Tony.
Okay, mate. Well, it's a signed copy, which is really nice. And it's dedicated to the creator's family, Paul Duffield's family, and to the memory of Carl Sagan, which I thought was really interesting, actually. You may know Paul from his work on Freak Angels.
Yep.
Now, I can't remember who talked about Freak Angels. Somebody mentioned it on a previous show, didn't they? One of the guests, I think. Not sure.
It was one of the early ones. That was a really, really early one.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I've yet to read Free Candles, although I do have on my read pile the first trade, and it's been sitting there for a while. I should really get around to it. And I certainly will after reading this. It's a comic that's dedicated not only to his family, but to the American astrophysicist, the aforementioned Carl Sagan. Do any of you know who that is? Maybe a little young for him.
I know, Carl Sagan.
Yeah, it escapes me now, but I know the name, and I know as soon as you say it, I'm going to know who it is.
Yeah.
That's pretty much me as well. Yeah.
Right, Carl passed away in 1996, and he was really had a big impact on me and kids of my age. He's an extremely obviously clever guy who was one of these scientists who was great at communicating ideas. And, you know, he had some sort of very, very well-known documentaries. He did a series called Cosmos, which is about the universe and sort of theories around it. And he sort of, as a kid, he sort of opened my eyes to it. And he had that sort of, it was across often, I think, between science and science fiction. And it fitted into the world of science fiction that was sort of pre-Star Wars, you know. Mm. And sort of serious books on the subject. But he also wrote the novel that became the movie Contact. Do you remember that one?
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster, that's the one. So as soon as I saw his name in this book, I felt a sort of, you know, already a bit of kinship to, you know, I thought, oh, I've got to read this. It looks really good. So it's slightly bigger than A4. It's got a lovely sort of cardstock cover with a big eye to design on the cover. But it's the colours throughout it. It's colour throughout, but they're very muted. A lot of muted browns and greens. And a little tiny splash of red on one of the pages, which is really interesting. It's full bleed, mostly in full page or montage splashes, about a human being, albeit a sort of augmented and advanced human being. And it's he has a sort of pseudo metaphorical birth on the opening page. Very, I haven't said dreamlike for a while, have I? But it is very dreamlike, and he is sort of he's laying in the open hands of a person, you know, in the sort of fetal position, and then he wakes up. But as he wakes up, you notice that he's got almost plugged in to the building.
Yeah.
And he unplugs these things from his body, and there's a whirl of mathematical formula sort of swirling around on the floor and around his head.
Yeah.
That he begins to write with using his finger in the sort of light of it. He gets dressed and he goes to work, and he's surrounded by what you believe are sort of holograms of people from around the world, showing the sort of different sort of colours and creeds of people, all shapes and sizes. And there's a hologram of a female sitting behind him playing a cello. It's one of those sort of minimalistic, perfect houses that you see in very cool sci-fi movies. You know, I don't know if you've seen Rollerball, but when he goes to the house, you know, this person is sort of very sort of functional and cool looking, and there's no clutter and one of those sort of things, you know. And then you see him walk out of his house directly into the green grassy hills of an alien landscape. And above it, you see a big moon, which is sitting above the earth. But just if you look closely at the sort of vista in the landscape, just above to the left is the shape of the cosmos, which was the iconic symbol for the Carl Sagan book and series, which was nice. And he sits in a deck chair and he sort of begins to dream, and he falls into the land. He sort of sinks back into the land of the world. And then the final page is a picture of a, I mean, it's not a long book, it's about 12 pages, but the final page is of a stork taking off and surrounded by the storks, signifying the sort of new life thing about it, you know. There's a pull quote on the back by Robin Asimov, who's the daughter of Isaac Asimov, which is very sort of a great idea, sort of good for the pacing of the book. And it says, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then this book is an epic, beautifully done, and paging through Duffield's work is distilled joy. For anyone who values creativity and craftsmanship, Signal will be a valued possession. And she's not wrong there. It is a really beautiful, beautiful presentation. There's one moment that threw me slightly as he walks down this sort of, I don't know, corridor, I suppose, between the houses. He comes out of a perfect room into a cracked and sort of wallpapers falling off the walls corridor, and on the floor you see the splatters of blood, and it sort of throws you a bit, but throws you in he means to throw you with that, you know. Really, really good, really well done. So I posted a picture of it on Facebook and Twitter, and I got a reply from friend of the show and cosplaying, is it a rodent, I don't know, cosplayer Sarah Harris, and she, who, surprisingly enough, is also a mathematician, which I did not know. We were just talking about it, weren't we? Mm. Clearly one of our cleverest listeners, probably our cleverest, let's face it, with our listeners.
we love you all, we love by you the all. Way.
So she was telling me about it, and it's she loves this book, and the reason she wrote to me, she says, look, I love this book. I mean, you know, it's really nice that you've got it. Are you going to review it? And I said, well, yeah, I probably will do. And the spiral of the formula on the floor is called the Fibonacci spiral or sequence. Right, so here's me dropping the science and the history. So I looked this up, and it's after, yeah. It's after a 13th century Italian mathematician who I do not fucking pretend to understand because I'm not clever in the slightest. But the number sequence has all these origins. There's a whole journal written about this number sequence, and it's a recurring series of numbers that appears throughout science. And there's certain theories that say it forms a basis for that. If you follow the logic amongst it, it forms the basis for all creation of life, music, galaxies. You know, it's where science meets nature. If you see what I'm saying around that. Mm. And that is suddenly the book opens up and you realise what it's about. You think, oh, okay, I understand now. This is what the book's about. So I headed down the Google rabbit hole, which proved just to prove how stupid I am. Black was white, and I got killed on the first zebra crossing. How's that second week for a hitchhiker's quote? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Nicely done.
Thank you. It's a lovely piece. To be fair, I couldn't tell you how much it is because it was a present, but I don't expect it's that expensive. If you want to see more examples of Paul's work, go to paulduffield.co.uk, or if you want to have a look at his stuff on Twitter, it's @Paul_Duffield on Twitter. There you go. That's my one for this week.
I remember Emmy. It's a beautiful book. I heartily recommend that as well. I remember when I met Emma Melchman, got it from him. He also did a lot of covers for... I don't know whether it was Young Avengers or it was like Avengers 2.0 or whatever. It was some sort of young sort of version that was quite sort of digital as well. He had like covers and stuff. Just check out Paul's work because it's amazing stuff. And also, don't quote me on this, but I think he's got something to do with being... with the Phoenix as well.
Yes, he has. Yeah, I think that's a link on his Twitter page, actually.
Yeah, I think he's one of the people that, I mean, obviously there's a vast amount of people behind the Phoenix, but I think he's one of the minds behind it.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's more a sort of visual poem than a comic in many ways, I think.
Yeah, it's very poetic. Yeah. Very poetic. Yeah.
But yeah. Great stuff. Really enjoyed it. Yeah. There you go. It's a bit different.
Different indeed. But... Mm. Speaking of different, Dan Butcher. Yep.
Not your best segue, Vince. I hope you get a game later in the show.
I tell you what, you expect a lot of me. You really do.
I do.
After 61 episodes, you should know by now.
Well, I'd originally picked out to review 100 Times by Kate Fleming, but after listening to the podcast, I realised Tony had already done it. So I'm going to leave that one to my...
Did you enjoy it?
I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
cool. We can talk about that a bit later, though. But
we got a lovely email from them as well, didn't we?
Which
was really nice, yeah.
It's a great book. My boot sale find.
Yes.
I went to Nemesis by Mark Miller and Steve McNivens.
Yeah.
Have you guys read this?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
I have, yeah. I read it when it was single issues back in the day.
Okay.
It's one of those ones I saw and thought, I really fancy reading that at some point. I wasn't kind of like chomping at the bit to get it. But when I saw the opportunity to grab it, I did. I was really let down, I've got to say. It kind of felt like... I try not to... one of the things the thing we go under is like not reviewing books we don't like and being nasty about them. But obviously I'm caught on a bit on the hop with this. But... I'll read you a bit of the blurb from the inside. It's like, question, what if a super cool playboy with billions in the bank, a fleet of planes and cars and countless cutting-edge gadgets put on a mask and waged war on the forces of law and order? Answer, he'd be just like Nemesis and he would be very, very scared. So essentially, it's like the reverse Batman kind of millionaire playboy. Rather than dressing in all black, he's in all white. And his goal is to bring down kind of law and order, essentially.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of strong concept, but essentially for me the story doesn't really go anywhere. It's one of those writing styles where the character has got that kind of plot armor of whatever you do, he's planned a way around it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, catch me. I plan to get captured. Oh, you poured soup in my head. I planned that. And you're like, oh, what? It's kind of writing style that really I don't like, because it... you want to see characters reacting to the other person's actions and vice versa.
Mm.
So the protagonist is reacting to the antagonist, and it's a back and forth. But when you've got one character that says, well, I knew you was going to do that, that's why I've done X, it gets a bit tiresome. Like the more recent Doctor Who's are certainly guilty of it on TV. It's like, oh, now Doctor Who, the world's ending, but the Doctor's like, oh, well, I've done this. And then he essentially just talks you out of what you've done, because he set up all these intricate plans. He knew he was going to do that.
Yeah, there's only so much you can predict, isn't there? I think sometimes.
Yeah. It kind of gets a bit boring, because it's like, oh, it's the same. I'm bringing this real down now. It's a bit like, even though I really like the Dark Knight, the kind of Joker had a bit of that in it as well. And I said, like, well, yeah. I wanted to get captured so I could do this. And it's like, oh, really? Because there's so many variables that can happen when you get captured.
Yeah. Also, Nemesis is—it's a very sort of—is nihilistic the right word for it? It's very. There's not the good guys pretty much get screwed over, like, just constantly in it. And I know that's the sort of point of the story, but it just felt like it was happening. There was no real reason. It was just sort of happening. All of this stuff.
Yeah, it was just like relentless bloodshed. Much as I love violence and bloodshed in comics, this was just kind of this unending kind of grim misery of it. It was just Stephen.
The first issue. Yeah, I was going to say that looks obvious. The first issue was a big long chase, isn't it?
Yeah, it starts off kind of in Tokyo, where he's fucking up like the police chief over there, and then he kind of marks out his new one in America, and he captures the president. But there's a big chase and he gets caught, and that's where the whole "oh, I plan to get caught" thing come into it.
It's a great chase scene. I have to say the art in it looks amazing. It really, to me, it's a really great, it's an action movie, you know, chase scene. Look, I think the flow of McNiven's art looks great in it.
I will say that I like the art, but I wasn't really jonesing on the colouring. I didn't think the colouring.
Oh, okay.
I would say one of the problems with Miller, and he's been kind of, this is accusations been leveled at him a few times, he seems to write comic books that he wants to get made into films. I mean, there's writers like Michael Crichton who do that, and this very much feels like that. But I quite like Miller's stuff. I'm not going to hate him. I fell a bit flat,
mate. I like listening to him talk as well. I like hearing him. He has got a passion for it, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think anyone will disagree with what you said there, Dan.
No.
There's a twist in it, isn't there? Someone, she's got his baby, or there's some kind of twist in it.
Yeah, it's a really messed up twist.
Yeah, and it just seemed a bit, oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
This book, if I remember correctly, it came about, obviously Kick-Ass was huge. It was you can say it's a minor backlash when this came out, because it wasn't, I think it didn't really blow a lot of people away. And people were just thinking, Miller's a one-trick pony. He's only doing these things to make films, blah, blah, blah. We had a couple of years of Miller going quiet, and like the past...
Starlight.
Three or four years, Jupiter's Legacy, Starlight, Huck, Chrononauts. Yeah. You know, you can't doubt how good this bloke is, you know. But because he's putting out such a wide range of different stuff, it doesn't matter if these things get optioned or not. I mean, most of them do get sold before the first issue's even out.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's something for everyone. You can literally say that.
Mm. You know? And in related news, day 15 of Miller Watch.
What's happened today on Miller Watch, Tony?
Well, hourly, I'd set my alarm in the night time as well now. I've checked my phone, checked Twitter, no replies so far. Yeah.
Okay.
Day 15 Miller Watch, that's all we're saying.
Okay. Yeah, hopefully you haven't scuppered the chances there of... I think it's a fair assessment.
I think he'll admire your honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm a massive fan of Old Man Logan. I really like that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it. Would I want to see more of it? But I like the open-ended of the book, where kind of there's Logan and he's got like a Hulk kid and it's him against the entire world of supervillains, and it's like, I don't really need any more of that. I think there probably is going to be some more of that, but it's kind of nice little ending itself.
I think Civil War is fucking nice. I've got to tell you, love the idea.
Oh yeah,
love the miniseries. I think there's moments in that, some of my favourite moments in comics for years. The bit where the Punisher walks in and kills that supervillain. And
he kills like three of them in one go.
Yeah, Captain America beats him up and just says, fight back. And he says, no, because you're Captain America. And I think at that moment, like, you realise that Miller has got such a grasp of the Punisher that people
yeah, he understands the character
at that point for so many years before. You know, we'd had magical Punisher, we'd had all kinds of crap.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and in that moment, he's fucking summed him up, isn't he? You know,
it's the same reason he won't kill Daredevil or kind of.
Yeah.
He's a good person trying to do a good thing, so that's completely against what he's.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, Mark Miller's. He's certainly. I mean, he has divided opinion on some of his work. You know, he's obviously got some major fans that follow him through everything. And there's a lot of people that are just quite vitriolic and just don't like him. But I don't. One thing I do like about Mark Miller, I haven't really seen him be negative about other people. He's very self-promotional. Yeah. He's always, you know, selling his stuff and selling his work and selling other people's work that work with him. He's not afraid to give a shout.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't really badmouth anyone.
No. Yeah. And look at some of the artists he uses. He's got such an eye for talent.
Yeah.
A couple of things. I remember reading MPH by Duncan Fegredo's with his art in it.
I haven't read that yet.
Oh, the art in it is absolutely amazing. Yeah. And I remember I saw a comment by him asking, I think it said something like, does anyone know Wilfredo Torres? And that's all it said on Twitter. And this, a couple of weeks later, I bumped into Wilfredo at New York and I was sitting at his table chatting with him. And I said, you know, working with Mark Miller, are you? And he had that look like, how the fuck do you know that? And I said, well, because I saw him looking, you know, saying if anyone knew you, and he went, right, I'm going to tell you, don't tell anyone, Tony. And he told me about Jupiter's Circle.
Oh, cool.
Long before it came out. And I think that he's got a great eye because Wilfredo was only working at Dynamite at the time, you know.
Mm.
He hadn't really had any big exposure.
Yeah.
And, great
choice. Miller done thing where he's got the Miller World Forums and he wanted to look for an artist to do a comic book. So he had a competition on there.
Yeah.
And there were people there posting up their artwork to kind of get... You think, I'm not too bad. And you look at some of the stuff getting posted, like, fucking hell, that's really good. is really good.
You should have both had a go at that.
And also, it's I mean, a lot of people have spoken about this, that, you know, you can get a big artist who's on a big sort of mainstream book, but if Mark Miller says, you know, I'd love to work with you, blah, 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 and you're going to have some of the back end of this because we're going to co-create it, they're going to go for that every time. Do you know what I mean? That's why someone like Capullo, who after a magnificent run on Batman, let's be honest, is now working with Mark Miller on something that's probably going to be badass. Yeah,
and a little bit behind in his scheduling.
I'll
sort of laughy comments from him about, oh, look, just got to stay indoors, get this in on time. You know, you think, oh, okay. Yeah.
a big name artist is behind on the schedule. Oh, blimey, that's news.
Nemesis. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. When you text me with that, I thought you were going to do the Warlock. And okay, that's I'll get you. Cool.
Warlock is Nemesis. The Warlock is fantastic. We've talked about it before, and
we have.
It's such a great character.
Mm. Yeah, and it's coming back in a few weeks.
Oh, brilliant!
Mm. Yeah, Prog 2000.
Oh,
yep. By
what's the current state of Neil Amada?
Oh, I can't remember. What's happened to him?
He's died and come back, and so many fucking things have happened to him.
Yeah. Blimey, he's like a Marvel character.
Well, I can remember him growing into his mask, with his mask growing into his face, and it's all kind of like melting like wax. It's fucking horrific.
Oh,
it's really well done.
Yeah,
great character.
Mm.
Yeah,
all of them. Yeah,
yeah. So Nemesis, if you see it in your local bookshop, or whatever, pick it up and see what you think.
Give it a go. You might enjoy it. Yeah. It's very wide screen. It's a movie, isn't it? Basically,
I would recommend reading it. Definitely having a read.
Yeah,
if the artwork alone, and see what you think of it.
Yeah. Brilliant. So my pick for this week is Treves, A Restless Night.
Oh, okay.
Is by the Merrick the Elephant Man crew. So we've got Tom Ward is the writer, Luke Parker did the art, Nick J. Shaw is the letters, and Claire Lenton is the editor. Had a successful Kickstarter, wildly successful Kickstarter. I got one of the physical copies from that. And one thing that's always nice about the Merrick books is the consistent sort of quality of the print and the way the books come out. That, you know, there's definitely, they're not just churning this stuff out on cheap paper, you know.
Yeah,
it's real nice. But this particular book is a one shot that's like a side story, kind of a prequel that happens before Merrick. And it's about well, I'll just read the back. Set before the events in Merrick, the Sensational Elephant Man, This story is loosely based upon a true story taken from Treves' journals of his experience travelling through India. It recounts his first encounter with the unexplainable as he fights for his life against a vengeful curse. So it's basically, he's taken the inspiration of the true life journals and then weaved a creepy horror story out of it, which is quite cool. Because we all know Tom likes to do his research. He loves a bit of research and drinking. But yeah, this is another home run for that crew. I think it's fabulous. And if they, judging from this, if they reunite for another Merrick miniseries in the future, it's going to be something very special.
Well, this is half as good as Merrick. It's going to be great.
Merrick's great. This is another step up. And this brilliant. this is only like a 43-page one shot. Do you know what I mean? It's literally that. It's the best kind of one shot though, because you can enjoy this tale sort of purely on its own if you want to, because of the nature of the story. Why you wouldn't want Merrick is beyond me, but you know, there you go. We've talked about that series enough. This particular tale it's effective, creepy, and wonderfully told with some unexpected sort of set pieces, like action pieces, because Merrick's a lot on the atmosphere. There's not so much action going through that series, whereas there's some big action set pieces in this that blew my mind. Actually, there's a double page splash that maybe might be one of my favorite comics things I've seen this year, you know.
Okay.
If that I know that the cover of this is quite striking and they offer it as prints, and that's good enough in itself. It's sort of like Treves and like this army of rats is like swarming upon him, but there's a double page splash that could equally be an absolutely fantastic sort of print like that. But the art's one thing. Tom's writing is like on point, as we said, like he researches well, and like his script, but the script is like sharp, and tonally it's in keeping with the sort of period nature of the piece, like the way people talk. Like characters speak like they would at the time. But it's not hard to read. It's not hard to follow, which is can be a bit of a task, because some people don't get on when they try reading sort of old sort of books, do they? And the characters are great in it. You know, there's a lot more to them. They're very layered. And there's a poetic nature to the storytelling that is kind of it's reminiscent of like old school literature, like Conan Doyle or Lovecraft. I mean, Lovecraft's an easy go-to, but, you know, all those sort of writers of that sort of period. But also, some of the pages reminded me of those sort of wonderfully OTT pages you see in the classic Lee and Kirby Marvel books, you know, when they went really crazy. The page I'm talking about, which is a wonderful double-page splash, there's some narration, and this is the dialogue in it. "They say the eyes are the windows to the soul. I was there, face to face with this monstrous thing. I could see nothing in that eye. There was no cornea, no reflection, just empty blackness, a void, an abyss. And yet at the same time, it called to me. It was infinite. There was a strange singing in my head. It drew me to it." I think we can all agree I should narrate audiobooks, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. And I was so avoiding saying my thing with one eye is calling to you too.
Starblazer.
Starblazer.
No, but that's the kind of sort of narration and the dialogue. You know, there's a wonderful sort of old school poetry to it. So the writing's on point. But Luke Parker's art, I tell you what, this boy's on a fast track to big things. I know he's done some work for Image. I know Tom's probably struggling to keep hold of him because he's wanting for other stuff. If this book's anything to go by.
He's definitely improving, isn't he?
Yeah.
Isn't he? I think he might be off on a project. I'm going to say maybe.
Yes, it wouldn't surprise me, you know. But I think
I'm not sure if we can say that or not, but yeah, I think so.
I think it's cool that like he's invested in this Merrick universe. You know, it seems to be their creation. You know, and whenever he can, he comes back to it. And Tom, I mean, to be fair, Tom gives him room to shine. So it's some writers get a bit carried away with their own words. Does that make sense? Like they'll fill a page with lots of speech bubbles, and especially if you're doing like a period piece, some people try really hard to write, you know, all the dialogue and narration and stuff. But Tom just lets him fly, really. You know, there's plenty of action scenes and moments of just atmosphere as well, which, you know, if anyone's read Merrick, then they know Luke's perfect at that kind of stuff. If you haven't heard of Luke's work, if you like the work of like Michael Avon Oeming, and I think Mike Mignola is
Paul Gulacy, I'm going to say as well. Yeah, P. Craig Russell. There's a little bit of all that sort of stuff in there.
There's all of that, and a wonderful storytelling he does in his work. So I think if you like that kind of stuff, Luke's right up your street. But I really feel he's like finding his own voice now. Rather than, I mean, people always make these lazy comparisons, but I think as he goes on, you know, his art's definitely developing into its own thing. And he's certainly doing something that not many people in the small press are doing right now. In the
and he's worked on, didn't he do an issue of Sex with Joe Casey? I think
he did indeed, well. Yeah.
Oh, wow,
yeah.
Cool.
Which I haven't read yet. I haven't read any of that book.
That goes there, I've got to tell you. So I read the first trade. It's well written, but it definitely goes there. It certainly lives up to its title, you know.
Really?
Awesome.
Dan's in.
That's what it says in the tin.
Yeah. And what a sexy tin it is. yeah. But no, Treves is a great book. They'll have the collection with it. You know, they'll have it with them at conventions, with the trade paperback of Merrick. You know, I thoroughly recommend that people get this. Like I said, it's designed brilliantly. The production's of the highest values, and there's a group of creators in total unison. You know, because I think Nick J. Shaw, you know, got to say a lot of big shout out to him on the letters as well, because it's just perfect for what this story is. So I think this one is a must buy if you see it at shows. Plus, there's also beautiful pin-ups by Dean Beatty, Ian Laurie.
Oh, another one.
He, that's why he hasn't been doing any comics recently, because he's been doing pin-ups for everyone. Yeah. God, we love you, Dean. We're glad
he does great pin-ups, though. Yeah. He does do great ones.
Definitely.
And there's also another pin-up by Vlad Legastav. I hope I got that right.
Oh, Vladdy.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Everyone's a friend of the show. If you want to pick up this book, you can go to merrickcomic.co.uk. They've got a store there where you can get all the printed versions or digital versions, etc. For the creators, you can follow them on Twitter. Tom is at Highbrow Trash. Luke is at Art of Parker. And Nick is at Ironbark_.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They love an underscore, people with Twitter accounts, don't they? They love a bit of an underscore, some people.
It's a cheap way to get away with like having an original name, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose
so. Names are taken, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Starblazer, I bet that's taken.
Especially that's taken.
Yeah.
Star_blazer.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Or Starblazer cock.
Or you could have, I don't know, 4-inch Starblazer. That's sure. That can't be taken.
Yeah. Never goes down if you watch it.
Oh dear. So, yeah, I think some great books there that you people need to check out.
Yeah, that we transformed into a penis joke. That was good.
Everything we do transforms into that somehow.
That is true, yeah.
Now, like I say, we had a couple of subjects to talk about.
We did.
And Dan, we've been throwing ideas around for subjects recently. And we thought we'd go the visual route this week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Dan Butcher, he was responsible for this week, so take the credit, Dan. But what was the little what was the subject that we wanted to talk about this week?
Well, this started off on Saturday. I was kind of hunting around looking for this costume designs, really good costume designs. There's one site I always kind of check out, and that's Project Rooftop or Rooftops. If you Google it, essentially they do like challenges where they bring up an old hero or an old character, and they throw it out to the
They're
artists, anyone who can contribute, and the best couple of designs they post up, like from their forums, and you get some really great designs by people who kind of understand the characters and what makes them work. So one article popped up on their website, Geek Tyrant, and it was female superhero costumes given practical redesigns, and the artist is gone under the pseudonym of, what's their bloody name, Lord Ingvard. And I posted some of these on Facebook and some on Twitter, and the artist has gone through and basically made all these the female characters, superhero characters. There's Supergirl, Zatanna, Wonder Woman, and given them really bland, generic costumes that just don't really work. And so I was kind of putting it out to people, listeners of the podcast and whoever else, like what makes a good costume design and what do you look for, and what would constitute a bad one?
Yeah.
And we had like a number of responses. Should we do you want to talk about our own kind of preferences first?
Or? You want to start with one of ours? Do you want to start, Dan, and then we can talk a little bit about what's come through and go through each other's? Shall we? Or?
Yeah.
So what are you, Vista?
Yes. Oh God, there's another name for me.
That's why I call you on Twitter. That's why I call you on the WhatsApp group, yeah. The Vista.
Yeah.
I
would. one of the classic costumes, it just absolutely stands the test of time, is the Spider-Man costume.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yes. The red, the blue, the big white eyes with the black rims. It's deceptively simple, yet if you try and draw that webbing,
can't be easy.
It's not easy. It's one of the kind of not restraints you have as a design in the comic book costume, at least, is the same you'd have in an animation, but not so much so. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that this costume's got to be drawn over and over again.
I was talking to Alan Davis about this. My mate Alan.
Old Al.
No, and I asked about Spider-Man. You know, how it seems like it's simple to draw, but is it quite difficult because of the nature of that webbing?
Yeah.
And him being a pro, he was like, no, you know, the webbing's fine. The tricky bit with the webbing is the way the costume, like the mask, how it comes together at the back. Because everyone obviously knows how front on, most people can draw Spider-Man front on, but that sort of wraps around his head. And then, how do you deal with that bit of the back? And he says, you know, you can tell when some artists have a problem with it, when they're trying to draw Spider-Man's head from certain angles, and you have to deal with those lines, you know.
But I can see that definitely. Yeah.
If I was an artist, I'd buy a fucking mask off of eBay and then put it on a teddy bear head or something. Just cheap, totally cheap.
Dan Butcher's Spider-Man. Why is his head so oddly shaped?
Why has he got weird ears?
The mask looks great, but the fucking head's so weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Spider-Man costume is an absolute classic. The designs I've seen online for it, and ones I really like, is where it's the homemade look. It's never kind of been canon in Marvel.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. I want a Spider-Man costume that looks like he's pulled it out of his rucksack and put it on his head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not really washed. He can't really wash it. You know, you had that scene, didn't you, where he's trying to wash it with Aunt May in the room?
Yeah.
And, you know, all that sort of thing. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see it. I'll accept the odd issue where it's armor. You know, it's a little one-off. But I don't want glowing stuff and,
The Spider-Man costume, that is one of the major heroes' costumes that's had the most versions, isn't it?
But very small variations at times, you know. Yep. But people soon notice it. I remember when Byrne started drawing him and there was just these variations. You thought, that's really different suddenly. But put your finger on what it is sometimes. But, you know, you get spider armour and stuff, then that's very different, yeah.
I must say the glowing spider that's on the current one, I'm not down with that.
I'm not digging that, not at all.
Like I said, I always imagine this is a teenager. Obviously, it's different in the comics because he's aged, whatever. But the resources he would have.
Yeah.
And what the kind of the movie ones, like in the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, when he's in the wrestling ring, I'm not really mad on that costume, but at least you can see that he's put that together himself.
Yeah.
When he suddenly got this costume, it's like, well, how the fuck did you make that? It's just it looks like a kind of a movie costume that a studio's made. It doesn't feel genuine. Like, you can understand Captain America's got this kind of his armor because he's made by S.H.I.E.L.D. Iron Man, he's got the money to do it, but Spider-Man should be a bit more. I think that's, in Civil War though, Tony Stark has made
Spider-Man's he's made the costume. That's how you can get away with it. So you know, that was quite intelligently done, I think.
Yeah, that was well done.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're looking at the movie Spider-Man costumes, I think even though it's a fucking an abomination of a film, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Exactly. Yeah.
With the eyes.
I'm glad to say that.
Great big eyes.
Fantastic. I think in terms of from page to screen, visually, that's the best Spider-Man I've ever seen. And this is I think the new Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe will be the best Spider-Man, I think.
Yeah.
But in terms of visuals, Amazing Spider-Man 2, that was the Spider-Man that I grew up with. You know, especially the Mark Bagley sort of Spider-Man and stuff like that. It looks kind of like that, you know, the big eyes. But the rest of the film's just god-awful.
It just sort of drags a bit, doesn't it? I don't really and the bloke who plays Electro, he's very good in Django, but in that it's just sort of, what are you doing? It's like suddenly someone forgot that Batman Forever was shite.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought, oh, we'll do mad. It with these, like this sort of mad character and not really.
I mean, yeah. This kind of segues onto a point I have with, you know, they call it tactical, but basically like making every superhero suit look essentially the same, like it's kind of made up of like a high-tech armor, not quite Iron Man level, but they've certainly gone that far with Batman now, that it's essentially like he's wearing kind of a high-tech armored suit as opposed to kind of material. And he, like in the Justice League trailer, I'm not going to hate on it, but like the Flash costume is, he's got like a kind of metallic armor on, and all the characters to wear that, he wouldn't be wearing that because it surely would impede with his abilities of kind of legging
it around. Yeah, I know what you mean. Just if I can quickly just return quickly to Spider-Man.
Go for it.
To me, has this ever been spoken about? Deadpool looks like, to me, looks like Liefeld tried to do a Spider-Man and didn't quite fucking pull it off.
And he has actually said that at one point.
Has he?
That the mask was like a Spider-Man. I mean, it's hard to know what he means and what he doesn't mean sometimes. But yeah. I know, in one interview, I think it was Word Balloon. Where he was talking about when he came up with that design, it was trying to be as much like the simplest sort of mask to draw, you know. And so he went for that Spider-Man design without any of the stuff on it.
Not going to hate on Liefeld. I'm the hater tonight. But Deadpool didn't. Liefeld didn't have much to do with Deadpool, as far as I'm aware. Like he didn't kind of write him. He literally just created the look. He was fleshed out by, is it Joe Kelly? The kind of the artist
he gave him a bit after. More sort of personality, I think.
Yeah, it's essentially. Yeah, he was just like the normal kind of life edge tropes of kind of like having the big swords on the back and the weird guns and pouches and stuff.
Pouches. As
it was just kind of like just a knockoff character, really. Just a rushed up.
As listener Matt Strott, he's the first one that's going to get mentioned. He said on the Twitter, "I think the best designs have lots and lots of pouches. Superheroes need a place for spare change and tampons." So I don't think
tampons. I said that fucking tampons.
I don't think he's being serious.
They're good if you're bleeding, I suppose.
Well, Tom posted up that thing for Daniel Klaus. Is it did the bat belt?
Yeah,
with all the things on it, that was nice.
Yeah,
cool.
So kind of that's kind of that.
There's a couple of obviously you got the Spider-Man, that's the iconic one, that because of the nature of it, the original is always going to be the best in a sense, isn't it? And they'll do different versions of it, but give it a couple of years and they'll go back to the classic design. That seems to be the way. That's just the way of comics. That's just the way it always
sometimes
is.
Sometimes when they go back to that classic design, I literally go, oh, we're back home again. You know, but that's probably just because I'm an old bloke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's probably people out there that love the sort of baggy Deadpool, or some people who like the cap armour that we had in a while ago. Do you remember in the 90s?
Oh, God, that's awful.
Captain America powers and he got a sort of weird armour.
I remember when he had a sort of laser shield when he was part of Forceworks. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I like Forceworks.
But do you like that shield?
Not sure.
Well, when he did, though, when... Kurt Busiek and George Perez were doing the Avengers. Didn't he have a sort of circular laser shield in that as well?
Yeah, he did.
I think, I like that.
I was saying one of the kind of good things about a good character design in my book is you can look at the character and get so much information from it without knowing anything too much about them. The design says a lot. Like one of the ones that kind of real strip back is Rom.
Yeah.
It's like here's a man been transposed into the kind of this weapon, and all the human features on his face are absolutely gone, and we got these two haunting glowing eyes coming out of the darkness.
Yeah,
and he's kind of complete
tragic quality, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah, he's kind of complete detached from his humanity, and it's a really good design, really simplistic, and it's got that kind of simplicity that anyone can put their spin on it by changing the armor as necessary.
A tiny bit of a twist, haven't they, in the new series?
I've not read the new series.
Sure, I read the Free Comic Book Day thing and I thought, I'm not digging the art too much. It seemed a little bit, I don't know, a little bit fan art, arty.
Okay.
Probably a horrible thing to say, but it was sort of, I don't know, I wasn't feeling it just because, probably because I'm an old fart and Sal Buscema wasn't drawing it.
Yeah.
Or Steve Ditko, you know?
Or
Frank Miller. Yeah.
Now, I know Tony's got a character that he's going to talk about, but before he does,
and
speaking of those recognised, those things you brought up just then, Dan, I think is a good chance to bring up this on the Twitter. Io Black on the Twitter He gave a couple of messages, which was, you know, I'll just read them all off because I think it makes some really good points. I'd say good and memorable character designs speak to the value of building around a few strong elements. The all-time greats, Batman, Spider-Man, etc., are still recognisable no matter how much you abstract them. In other words, a five-year-old could draw Spider-Man and still create a portrayal that other people would recognise, which I think is very true. Same hold true in other media. Think of Mario, instantly identifiable even as a tiny pile of NES pixels. Similarly, see how many other iconic characters in pop culture can still be passed as minimalist pixel art. So ideally, build around 1 to 3 strong visual distinctive elements. More, and people start losing focus. I think that's...
Right, yeah. Interesting. It's interesting how everyone went straight to the iconic image for a good design. I don't know whether I agree with that in all cases. I think something like, you know, some European designs, you know, that have a complicated, you know, and detailed design, is, as long as it's consistent, I think works as well. And if you want to create a product, if you want to create a, you know, a product like Superman or Batman or Spider-Man or these sort of ones that have got one of these instantly recognisable designs or icons, you know, when we see the bat signal in the air, you don't immediately think, oh, that's a Batman comic. That's from, you think the word Batman, don't you? Or you think the image of Batman. I think a good character design should go beyond the purely iconic. Does that make sense?
But I think a lot of those iconic characters, the ones we know as iconic because they're so mainstream, they were also created so that one person could draw it and then 100 artists that came after them could draw it. So it was simple so everyone could do it. That's why, these designs that are wonderfully detailed and intricate are fantastic. If you've got a fill-in artist for an issue...
If it's a creator-owned thing, you know, I mean, I'd say Cerebus is a great design.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
You know. I would say the Conan character is a great design. You see him on a page, whether he's wearing a, you know, this huge sort of horned helmet and a chainmail armor, or if he's just in a pair of pants.
The only issue Conan has, well, actually, I think it speaks more to the name of Conan, is whenever you see a barbarian, you immediately think of Conan.
Yeah.
But that design was also used for what was it, Kull and things like that.
Yeah, but I would say you can tell the difference between Kull and him. Surely
that depends on the artist as well, though.
If I opened a Cull comic, I would put Conan as more bulky, you know, more a sort of bodybuilder, you know,
brute.
I just worry that we're overly worried about creating a product compared to creating character design. I don't know. It's just, I'm just putting it out as a question. I'm not
having anyone.
I'm just thinking out loud.
No, I think you know, a character design has to be integral to what that character is and what they do. Whenever, like, you know, I'm creating my stuff, and this isn't just Red Mass, this is everything in general, I try to think of how things work, how this person's going to move.
Yeah.
So if someone's quite athletic and agile, I'm not going to cover them in lots of, like, straps and buckles and, you know, I don't know, a backpack and a bum bag, because they're not going to be able to have all that when they're doing, they're supposed to be doing a backflip. You know,
these fanny pack.
Oh. Oh, yeah, for all the US listeners.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, a design, I mean, like Dan was saying, that person tried to make costumes that were, what was it, Dan? What did he say? It wasn't realistic. They were trying to make them.
What? My point was, like, is no problem if you want to have your character wearing a great big orange scarf, but then they kind of, like, they're a stealthy kind of character that hangs around in the dark or whatever. There's not a problem with that. Like, just kind of, if you want to draw it so far towards realism to the point where it's kind of just a bit bland, and you know, it's got to be an element of fantastic, surely. I would argue. Yeah.
There's an element of that in Watchmen, isn't there? Is it Dollar Bill who gets caught? Is cloak gets caught in a revolving door, and he gets shot, you know, and that's what Moore's talking about there, isn't he? It's got to be functional as well.
But I can make the counter argument, like when people say, like, no capes because of the Incredibles and Ed the Mode, I was like, that was just a plot device for the film.
Superman looks great in a cloak, Batman looks better in it, you know, in a
if you draw comic books, having a cape is a fucking great way of illustrating movement.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So.
And that's a big consideration, isn't it, mate?
Yeah.
All designs, really. Yeah.
So, like, it's just Superman blasting through the sky. If he doesn't have the cape on, it's so much easier to kind of illustrate that movement with it soaring behind him or.
Yeah.
I mean, that could you say that's purely just a visual thing, though, rather than, you know, being something of any sort of use?
Yeah.
Let's put it this way: Superman's iconic needs the cape. Visually, right. I mean, for me, you know, my Superman's always going to have.
We're going there in a minute. Don't forget.
Yep. But does he need a cape?
Well, he doesn't, does he?
No, he doesn't.
No, but it looks great.
Yeah, it does look great.
I think the whole Superman design was initially based on like a circus strongman. I presume the cape.
Oh, you're ruining all my points.
Oh, sorry.
Tony, take it away, because you want to talk about Superman. Because I think that's great.
Yeah,
we've had Spider-Man, so take it away.
Let's do Superman. As I understood it, it was best and worst designs.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where we went, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think one of the best designs for me, and this comes out of something I was listening to. Vince, you and I both listen to Word Balloon, don't we? It's a good podcast. John Suntress is a good presenter, and he talks a lot about this. And he and I are of a similar age. And he describes, people go, oh, yeah, he's got his pants on outside his trousers. And he says that's because he was an acrobat from a circus. Everyone understands why that is. You know, it's one of those sort of shortcuts to being funny that stupid
people. It's
not
really funny.
You know, as soon as you say, oh, Doctor Who, they say, oh, I hid behind the couch. You didn't fucking hide behind the couch, did you? You know, when you go, oh, superheroes, oh, they wear their pants outside their trousers. Like, are you programmed in some way just to say that shit?
Yeah.
Now, I obviously growing up, and we talk about iconography, and the Superman costume for me, it has a number of reasons why it is like that. But I can see why they based it on a circus acrobat with a cloak, you know, because of the period it was created in. And, you know, that was who kids would see, you know, flying on, you know, above the stage in the circus and you know, at the cinema. And, you know, Burt Lancaster was playing an acrobat in a movie. And, you know, that's how they would dress. So that's how, I don't know, bloody Robin Hood and, you know, these sort of characters would, you know, would be dressed in movies, you know, Depression era movies. But what it also does is having those trunks, like you say, allows movement. It assists in the movement and allows the eye to follow where the, you know, if it's a kick or a punch or a jump or he's squatting or he's standing, you know, having that broken up line and colour throughout the body works better for me. What doesn't work better is just a solid lump of blue, which seems to be where they've gone with it recently, you know.
Yeah.
But I think they've done that. It's the Schuster is to get it away from the original copyright owner, isn't it? I think.
Is it?
The original creators, I think DC. So because we had all those legal battles.
Yeah.
And so that DC didn't have to deal with it, I think they may have taken away the red trunks just to be like, look. It's ours now. Because I think one of the red trunks things was quite integral to it being that original design. So
answer a lot of questions.
Although they are still putting out books with that design in.
Is it the digital only sort of series and stuff?
I'm trying to think. Doc Shane had drew him with them in that versus a robot, didn't he? That digital comic. That looks great. To be fair, that's one of the best. One of the best Superman stories I've read for a while.
True, but you know they can also sort of say it's non-canon. Do you know what I mean? It's not necessarily.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. Completely. Yeah.
But
is anything canon at DC at the moment? I've got to be honest. I'm completely confused by it all.
Very true. I think that design change. Whereas I agree with you. You know, the red trunks is my Superman. I believe, I mean, obviously there's more to it. I've said it in a very simplistic manner, so apologies to everyone. But I think it did stem from DC and Warner's wanting to take that weapon away from the people who wanted to argue for more.
That's
money.
An interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it is interesting. But let's take that as true and move on from that. The design itself is still bad. It's still, to me, it looks just a bloke in a blue jumpsuit. You know, he's got. I actually bought a Superman comic yesterday, Action Comics 960, just to make sure I knew what I was talking about, you know, because I've not read one since about a year into the New 52. And what he's got now with this, it's the same costume or very similar, but he's got a red belt over the top where it was a yellow belt previously, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about the belt. What is the belt situation?
Yeah, the belt is like halfway. It's like three quarters of the way around his waist, and then in the middle of it is it's red, and it looks like it's formed of some metal, and it sits. And in the middle of it is sitting on its own. Is like a buckle.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre, but it's where the belt had meaning and, you know, use in that when it was holding the trunks up, for example. It's just sort of this floating belt on a blue body, and I just think having that. Breaking, using something. Okay, we can't use the trunks anymore, but use something that breaks it up.
Mm.
You know, and when, especially when you're in the middle of sort of, I mean, a lot of this very, very heavily inked, colourful pages, you can't really tell which is a leg and what's in the air and all this sort of thing,
yeah.
Because it's just a mass of blue. You know, he's had that so long. It's such a shame because it's such a recognisable, and immediately sort of recognisable thing, and using that colour rather than. I don't know. I think Jim Lee designed it, didn't he, when they came back on the New 52. And there was a lot of talk at the time that, why is Superman wearing armour? Because he had that high collar. He almost had like a priest's collar without the white bit in the middle. And it was, and running a length of that as was a sort of noodling line. It was like a, like he was wearing some kind of sort of thin body armour.
It was like a seam. Kind of, yeah. I think it was designed more like armour, wasn't it? Which I think you can see more in the John Romita. Yes, you can.
But also they did that on Batman, and I'm thinking, I actually looked at it and thought, oh, is this something I'm missing here? Did Batman and Superman get their costume from the same place?
Yeah,
because it looks so similar suddenly. I don't know, and I know
a lot of those designs got a lot of stick when they first came out. The only one I know that this one a lot of people complained about, but I quite like the Flash's costume. I don't know why. I know a lot of people don't.
Right.
Because I know that had a lot of noodling and seams and stuff.
I didn't mind the Wonder Woman one too much, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Black trousers and the red top and the silver instead of
like
the gold.
The pants.
Yeah.
Like the white.
This
pants.
Kind of like moving away from kind of the gold and red and blue and just kind of trying to give her a bit more of a distinctive colour palette of hers rather than them sharing so many similar ones. But the Superman one, definitely.
Yeah, without dissing any particular artist, I think certainly some of the newer people, the people who I haven't really seen much of currently working on Superman and Justice League books, they don't have the chops quite yet to use the shadow and the movement of a body that doesn't have a multiple colours on it, you know, for me at the moment. Flash is easy because you've got the lightning bolts and, you know, stuff like that. Batman's is in shadow for a lot of his stuff, so you've got to work with that. But Superman should be front on, full colour, in your face.
And I also think that I think Superman needs to be created with some sort of bulk now. There has to be a definite physical difference, because a lot of the time he doesn't look like a Superman. He doesn't, he looks quite generic. He just looks like, a fairly thin, athletic guy with short, dark hair. He doesn't look like
Ed McGuinness when he's kind of really chunky. And
I
really like that. Yeah. That's a good look.
But his body shape seems, there's no consistency around his body shape. I was looking through some of the comics yesterday, and some of them he's like, he looks like a, a brick shit house, and some of them he doesn't.
Mm.
Who would you say your favourite Superman artist is? You get to choose one.
Oh, God.
I really like Frank Quitely on All-Star Superman.
Okay, interesting. Mm. Yeah.
So, I think he's really well done in that.
For me, like, a lot of the Superman stuff was the stuff I liked as a kid.
John Byrne's
Superman for me, the visual look of that was one of the most iconic.
And that had that Boy Scout thing, he was always out in the sun and you could see him and, I think I'm probably going to have to go with Gil Kane, I think.
Okay.
A lot of his covers, I like that sort of the strength, the sort of sinew of his, and the sort of the distinction of his line and arms and legs and costume and stuff, I think works really well. And obviously, because I grew up with Kurt Swan, Kurt Swan is my, if I think of Superman, I think of Kurt Swan,
I think
that character's a nightmare to redesign. I think it's, if you do that, you've really got your work cut out for you.
I think that character, never mind the design, just in general, I think that character is one of the hardest characters to deal with in comics.
Because it's now, anyway, certainly now. Yeah.
Whereas Batman...
This costume, Batman's... Everyone wants to write Batman as well, don't they? Everyone's got a Batman story they reckon, don't they?
Yeah. I'm a bit tired of Batman, to be honest.
I
must say. I'm just burnt out on him. Although, in terms of his design, I will agree with Johnny Cannon on the Twitter. He said, call me insane, but I much prefer Aparo and Adams Batman to the current version. I love that bat oval.
Me too.
Yes.
Definitely.
Whenever I doodle that Batman, he's always got that oval, that yellow oval.
Yeah, I like that.
Chest.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. I loved that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've just got one more comment around Superman is that when I first saw him and he was back in that costume, he was back and he was wearing that costume, and I thought, is that Mon-El? Do you remember Mon-El had a red? It's almost exactly the same costume that Mon-El had, but in blue, like reverse the colours. Yeah, and I think that's And then my last sort of worthy comment, just while it's still my turn, of worst costume is Cosmic Boy when he looked like he was wearing a Basque. Do you remember that?
You just wanted to use the word Basque.
Yeah, I like that. Do you remember what I'm talking about there?
No, I had to Google
weird,
that.
Weird, sort of, he was naked, but he had this sort of half costume that was strung across his chest. It's all a bit strange. I'm going to send you a picture of it in a minute, so you'll know.
A quick point on Superman. They did it for that Superman Returns. They kind of really toned down the red and said it doesn't all work together, and I really don't understand why. It works fantastically in the Donner films.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no surprise that when you're seeing images of Henry Cavill on the Justice League, he's got a big, bright blue suit.
Yeah.
And he's got the little jerry curl at the front of his hair.
Yeah.
So they're definitely making... Which, I mean, I think Henry Cavill's a brilliant Superman. I just don't think he's been helped with the films he's in.
Yeah, there's some moments in it, especially when he's Clark Kent for me, and I think, I really like this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I've only watched 10 minutes of Batman and Superman. There's that bit at the beginning where Lois is being held hostage, and like Superman saves her by putting the bloke into a wall like 500 miles an hour. As I would have thought Supes would have done the old laser on the gun and made him drop it or something similar.
I saw Vince Bond from the 11 o'clock just saying if Wonder Woman is just Gal Gadot standing still for an hour and a half, he'd still watch it. And I have to agree with him on that one.
Oh dear, you pig. For those who are listening who cannot see this, Tony just WhatsApped a picture of, was it Cosmic Boy? Was that what you said?
Mike Grell, the mighty Mike Grell, one of my favourite artists. Yeah.
But that costume.
You see what I'm saying there?
It's terrible
fucking
for an audio.
Hell.
It's terrible for an audio format because.
I'll put it on the Facebook page.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because you people need to check this out and let us know what you think of it. I don't think we could do it justice, so we'll leave it to you.
Yeah, I always, one of the things I always, if I'm when I'm designing a look for a character, would I go out like this? And I wouldn't go out like that.
Yeah.
I'd go out like that. You were going to Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, theme party, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Even then, you might get a few looks.
Yeah.
But fucking hell, he's taking it a bit far. But fair play, though.
Oh dear,
Vince.
In terms of, my go-to character design that I always love, and I've said it a couple of times on this show, is Captain Britain. Alan Davis, Captain Britain.
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay.
Now I could talk about that. See, I prefer that one to the original one, the one where he had the, instead of that full-over mask where you can't see his mouth. I like the one where he's stocky.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's got the long sort of cavalier boots. Sort of thigh-high boots. So I've said that enough times. So I think a character that's certainly got a lot more talking points between the lot of us is Wolverine. Now, this is a character that's had quite a few looks, quite a few different looks. I'm going to say out loud now that my favourite is the brown and orange from the 80s.
Oh, okay.
I think that's head and shoulders above all of the others. Always has been. There was no sort of shoulder pad type spike things. You know, I know the yellow and blue costume is a classic costume, but for me, that, you know, the brown and orange was, that's my Wolverine. You know, that was also when he was at his best because he wasn't overplayed. He wasn't in everything.
Yeah.
But there's been so many different versions of that character. I mean, Tony, for you, what's your favourite Wolverine?
I like the Phoenix Saga era Wolverine. In the my first exposure to Wolverine was in the Hulk, and I thought, who the fuck is this? You know, he almost looks like he's got whiskers in that to me.
Yeah,
you know, and I thought, oh, who's that? And then I completely forgot about him until, and then I read The Dark Phoenix, and somebody said to me at school, said, oh, he was in the Hulk, and I went, oh, that is the same character, you know. But that moment, I mean, there's so many iconic moments in that, but the moment where he's in the sewer, you know, and yeah, just that. And it's completely diametrically opposed to how he should be. He should be this sort of scruffy bloke, you know, who's always hiding in the shadows and in the forest of bloody Canada, or it is, and fighting people, and you know. Yeah. But he seems to have this sort of yellow and blue and black costume.
The thing,
you know,
the thing that always got me about Wolverine, which I thought was a unique design choice, was that mask. The iconic classic. Was he one of the first people to have that mask with the two sort of spiky?
Yeah.
How do you describe it? How do you describe that mask?
Kind of two wings, aren't they?
Yeah.
Off the face.
Did that?
Well, I thought his face might be that shape underneath, because you didn't see him without it with it off for a while, did you? And no. I thought, is his hair that? You know, and he kind of was, wasn't it, when he took it?
Yeah,
off?
It was. Which I thought was fairly ridiculous. The fact that he took the mask off and his hair seemed to fit inside the bits at the side, and of course he had sideburns, which you couldn't see because they were tucked underneath the other bit. You know, he looked like a different guy when he took the mask off.
Oh right,
yeah, this thing, wasn't it? Yeah.
Sent you a picture on the WhatsApp group. We put it on the Facebook and Twitter by Dave Kennedy. We were talking about concept costume design, and Dave Kennedy on Twitter at Cherry Sheriff, and he's done like Wolverine cloaked in a kind of and a wolf fur over his head and arms, and it's really good. I really like it. You check that out. But yeah, kind of the kind of the more feral looking, the better for me, especially regarding Wolverine.
He's got to have super hairy arms.
Yep.
Always. Yep. Which is always like, you know, whenever I used to draw him as a kid, you'd always like make those little pen marks just over and over on the back of his arm. His bicep would be completely smooth, but everything else around it was always covered in hair.
I mean, would you be able to judge a good character design by how much they've been ripped off? Because Wolverine's certainly been ripped off.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people from Image Comics who owe him a few quid, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
In terms of
Troll, the biggest culprit.
Shadowhawk, that was another one. You know, he's got the wings. But here's a question: did the Hawkeye mask appear after Wolverine?
Oh that God, before, he got me there.
Yeah, before.
Was that before?
Yeah, it was in Avengers, wasn't he?
Ah.
Of course. See, I'm not usually a big fan of the letters on costumes, but I quite like Hawkeye's little H.
I kind of like that as well.
I do miss him having a mask.
Yeah. He was definitely the underdog. I really liked him as this sort of mouthy underdog who was always getting rows with people. And you know, he was such a likeable character back then. He's sort of been diluted a bit recently, I think, hasn't he?
It's a good character to have, like an antagonist on the team who kind of like winds people up. And
yeah.
You don't see enough characters these days that have...
And he started as a villain, didn't he? So.
Yeah. Have those sort of, you know, the turn up or boots or whatever. You know the sort of boots that Captain America had, Hawkeye had them, Deathstroke had them, didn't he, I think? Those classic sort of boots that had the weird... How do you just...
Well, they're kind of swashbuckling boots.
Yeah.
You never see them now, do you?
I always look like you could tuck something in them.
Yeah.
Keep a sandwich in them, I think, for me.
Yeah, put your magazine... tuck your magazine up the top and the sandwich on the other side.
I wonder why they were rolled down like that. Was it something to do with, like, you could roll them up if you're going through high, deep water or something?
I don't know. It's got to have something to do with Errol Flynn and swashbucklers that it came from, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah. In the 30s and 40s and stuff like that, I suppose.
But characters would always have those sort of boots, certainly in the 80s and, like, the 70s, wouldn't it? They would have those sort of boots, and they'd have, like, the sort of gloves that weren't too tight. The Captain America sort of combination, I think.
Gauntlets type.
Yeah. I always admired a superheroine who wears high heels whilst fighting. I think that's, you know, not only are you quite tough, but you've got an eye to, you know, how your bum looks.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm joking for everyone who's going to write in.
Yeah.
We've got a message from Chris Imber along the lines sort of saying, like, how many of the sort of female designs he doesn't think work. And I'd agree to extent that there's a lot of kind of female superhero designs where it's just acres of flesh on show.
Yeah.
But, like, it's equally as bad for the males. It's very kind of just fantastical, and you know, I mean, not everyone goes around massive six packs, huge biceps on show, and unlike us,
we carry it off though, to be fair. Do you know what I mean?
We do, right?
We don't call, we don't draw attention to it, just it's just always there, isn't it? Really,
see, you know, the Power Girl argument where she's kind of got like a big hole in her chest,
yeah,
Yeah. I was like, that's pretty fucking blatant. And then someone was saying, well, it's the fact that she's kind of Kryptonian, but she's got no heritage. It's all lost. So she's got an empty hole there. I don't know how to feel about that.
Yeah, I like an empty hole.
Starblazer. Dan, yeah. Dan, what would you call yours?
Worst design. There's a number.
No, but... that's not what I'm talking about. What would you
call? Leviathan. Could rise from the deep.
Always on the money.
That is good.
Always on the money. That should be the real name.
Yeah, but sorry for that, folks. But back to the costume design. We had another Alicky Chapel on the Twitter. She said, "Strong, athletic women have muscles. Armor that defines breasts gets the wearer killed."
Yep.
That goes back to, you know, especially with armor. I think.
Well, people don't like them.
Well, also the fact that.
Thing of like the costume design for women essentially has always been about kind of emphasizing their sexuality as opposed to kind of their combative nature.
Yeah,
like Valkyrie, she had a sort of round shielding of her breasts, didn't she? That worked quite well. Yeah,
but it's just not. It's
because people
functional.
Famously shoot at breasts when they're trying to.
That's always what I aim for.
God, I knew as soon as you said that, Dan, that was a mistake.
Usually, what you're firing at is not lethal, though, is it, Tony?
No. Yeah, it just needs clearing up.
Wet wipe or a Dettol.
I think I'm confusing sex with pornography. I need to stop watching it, I think.
It would stop all those comments and looks on the train into work.
Yeah. Listen, never read Razzle Reader's Wives on the Tube, because they can see in the reflection in the window behind you what you're reading.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, it's very vaguely reading, isn't it? I don't really read it. Yeah.
I think they're more worried about the trousers that are around your ankle.
Yeah. It's more the groaning and the smell.
It's more the shouting, William Shatner.
Boys, can we get back to the task?
Yeah,
sorry.
Do you think
we nearly went off topic there?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's not like, that's not like us.
That happens.
That's terrible. Now, in this day and age, do you think it's more function over form rather than form over function?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot more sort of military style costumes these days as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, certainly we can just say the Punisher has been totally been pared down to, he's got a Kevlar vest with the logo on, you know, gone are the tights. Because let's face it, you know, that's a classic look. That's the look I always remember, you know, the Mike Zeck issues and stuff. But if you think about it realistically, he's not going to do that.
I don't mind with the Punisher. I've got no problem with that at all. I kind of like that. I think he just does what he can with what he's got. You know, if he has to nick a jumper off a line, this sort of thing. I like that about him.
But what I'm saying is, he's not. If you think about it logically, if you're talking, he's going to do what he can with what he's got. He can't have that much lycra hanging around that he's going to paint a logo on.
No.
So you know, I really like the designs. What was it? Greg Rucker's Punisher Warzone, you know, when he took
what's the name of the artist in that? Marco, somebody or other.
That was amazing.
Where he just started spray painting it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I've got the Eye Patch Punisher is one of my favourite images, I think, at the moment from that series.
And it's one of those things that, you know, he grew a full on beard in that series as well, but you still knew that's the Punisher.
Yeah.
It's Frank Castle.
I mean, all the characters TB wearing that kind of military stuff, that's going to be up there. It's like it goes back to the early point we were saying that essentially I find a lot of the costumes with all looking that very similar aesthetic. I used to like it when characters would come together in crossovers, whatever, and they've all come from different sources, so the looks of them are all completely different and radical.
Yeah.
But now there's a very much a kind of a look to a majority of them. When they come together, it's like, well, they'll pretty much look like the same designer. That's one of the things with kind of a minor point with Civil War, when they're kind of facing off. It's like, do you have the fucking same tailor? Because they all look like they came out of the same kind of workshop all their costumes.
Yeah, it's just because you've got lazy Jim Lee just designing everything in exactly the same way, unfortunately. Yeah. Oh, look at me being bitter. Yeah.
Bloody hell, we're a little bit feisty on this episode, aren't we?
We are a bit lively, aren't we? Because it's a midweek, you see, because normally on a Sunday we've had a little bit of a rest. You know what I mean? Afternoon snooze. But today we've all been at work, haven't we? So, yeah.
Yeah, we're all a bit feisty. So, Wolvie, I mean, I've said, I don't know what the worst one of that is. I'll tell you a Wolvie design, back to Wolverine. I'll tell you one that I never really gelled with, which is a classic one that people love drawing. Is that sort of Weapon X design where he's got that big metal thing on his head.
He's
basically just in a pair of pants, and usually in the snow.
That's usually just a moment, isn't it, in the comic?
Yeah, it's a moment, yeah. But, you know, I never really gelled with that, really. I understand what
that was. That was one of my favourite bits of, spoilers, of X-Men Apocalypse.
Okay, that bit's in it. Cool.
Wait till you see, yeah, it's very well done.
Oh, nice. You're forgetting about the one in the 90s or 2000 where he had that kind of blue kind of hood on. Don't you remember it? Like a skull cap kind of thing.
Oh, when he became the... he had all the adamantium.
More feral,
wasn't
it?
Yeah,
they're fucking terrible.
I've
just posted that picture.
That's
of...
That's the one, Dan.
I've just posted that picture of Cosmic Boy on the Twitter, and Jen has asked me if I'm cosplaying that at Melksham. Yeah.
Please don't.
please don't.
We'll just do it in our hotel room.
Yeah,
fine.
Fair enough.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks,
Jen.
Another message on the Twitter that we got, my buddy Daniel Mark Chan, he got in touch and he said, bad design, I give you Master Pandemonium, look at him, he has babies for hands.
Oh, I like that.
I have to send you a picture of this.
That's the Byrne thing, isn't it? The John Byrne.
I saw that.
I believe it is.
Got now, the vision thing, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether that's just one scene or whether that's his thing. But
that's their kids, isn't it? They realise their kids aren't really their kids.
Oh,
yeah,
that's so weird.
It is a bit weird, yeah.
Because to go with that, he's got some weird red and yellow combo. He's got a red cape that's got it's a yellow cape, and he's got a sort of red pyjamas on.
Weird masky thing, isn't he?
It looks like he's got luminous tape around his chest. It's weird.
Yeah. I'll tell you one that Gareth Hopkins mentions is, and something we should mention is Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
You mentioned it from the point of view of most costumes are symmetrical, and I think that's certainly in superheroes very true for a lot of characters, isn't it? But the one he was thinking of was Dredd, and I thought, yeah, I get you. And Dredd is a great design.
Yeah, because he said he couldn't really think of any others apart from Dredd that work so well that aren't symmetrical. And that I must say, that's a tricky one to draw. So, you know, I know a lot of people, an awful lot of people have drawn him over the years, and whenever I've tried sort of doodling him in my rough kind of way,
There's a lot to it. It's like doing three or four drawings in one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've got to get the eagle right, you've got to get the badge right, the helmet's a strange old thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to go simple with the design, I'm going to say Bloodshot. I really like that design. I think it works really well.
Yeah. Thing we said about silhouettes, didn't we, as well? Someone mentioned that.
Here's a pop quiz question for you. Who do you think, out of everyone, this is all publishers everywhere, has the simplest design for a character? I've got one. I just want to know if you two think of one.
Okay. Interesting.
I'll tell you what.
John
Locke's, his comic book character, I can't remember the chap's name, but the white suit and the red tie.
Afterlife,
I think, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to go the simplest design ever, it's a Silver Surfer, isn't it?
That's the one I was thinking of.
You know, because you've been in my comic room, I've got a huge poster of the Silver Surfer over my desk.
Yeah.
So that's why I got that. I was going to say Mage, but that's a little play on Shazam almost, isn't it? Captain Marvel, you know.
And also, a lot of these characters, you know, I mean, very much like John Constantine, Time, whatever it is, that's a classic look. But it's just a guy in a trench coat with blonde hair, isn't it? It's very simple. As long as you put a cigarette in his mouth, you know exactly who it is.
You know straight away who it is. Yeah, you do. Yeah. Okay.
One of my complete fuck up designs was the 90s Thor. You know, in the 90s, maybe Miles will redesign a low character. Yeah,
you're not talking about Thunderstrike, are you? Not.
I like Thunderstrike. That's Thunderstrike. Serious, you know.
Yeah. It's the one where essentially he was wearing like tight spandex blue, and he had some like shoulder pads, and it was cut off at his midriff, so you could see his belly button.
Yeah.
And it's like you just look back at the roots of the character. Like he's Norse god of thunder. And Vikings, all this stuff you can go to, and you're going to go to a fucking cut-off blue top.
Yeah, all that history. All that history. Yeah,
rich designs, everything you can go and like, use in your character, and you're going to fucking do that. That's one of the things about characters. If you know like your character and where they're coming from, like you mentioned with the Punisher, it informs the design of what you're gonna make.
Yeah.
So
it's very key. I mean, we talked about it last week. We talked about Hilda, and she's immediately recognisable with her little silly hat and you know, big shoes, and you know, I think that's a great design.
All those kind of ones that have stood the test of time have had great designs.
Yeah, I was reading Exo Man of War this week. We'll talk about it in a minute, but I've been tearing through some Valiant, and I love that design for his armor. It's got that sort of, you can see his face, but it's got a sort of brutality to it, you know, where he's half barbarian, half Iron Man. Looks great, really good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's so much we could talk about on this one.
Yeah,
Savage Dragon is a great Savage Dragon's one. Immediate, you know.
Yeah. Spawn. No matter what you think about Spawn or Tom McFarlane or whatever, that was a good design. You know, that took off gangbusters. And just the little details, like, it just seemed like it was a design on his suit when really it was the M of Malbolgia from Hell. Just those little details that actually meant something. You know, that was cool.
Do you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say the Thing from the Fantastic Four as well. I just love that design. I think that's so good.
I must say, that might be the most individual design of all time, because there's absolutely nothing like it.
Yeah, and it portrays such emotion, you know, especially when he became, you know, sort of 10, 20 issues in, when he became that proper sort of rocky sort of version. I love that. It's so good. Yeah.
It's weird. The Fantastic Four have had a real troubled history with costume design as well.
Yeah, I remember there was a big kickoff when Byrne made the collars about an inch longer. You know, he had
a black bit
around the neck. Everyone's like, what's going on?
Or the classic one, I think it was the mid-90s when Sue Storm, essentially her costume seemed to disappear. There was
a stripper. Yeah,
that was awful. Awful.
Yeah.
But they're a group of characters where I think the classics weren't the best. Although I must say...
Superman as well. Yeah, it goes in there, like the classics.
I like the black and white. What were they called when...
Freedom Foundation, wasn't it? No.
I really like that design. It wasn't necessarily Fantastic Four, but I liked the design that was going on there.
Marko Dedrovic. I'm going to murder his name already. But he's a really good designer. I like some of his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're not always kind of like, well, I'd say that's good for the character, but it's always very striking.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say Ghost Rider as well. I'm going to say Ghost Rider. Yeah. I love that design.
Which Ghost Rider are we talking about?
The motorbike, Johnny Blaze. Yeah. He's got the iconic leather jacket with the sort of square, you know, the angled design across the front, like a lapel that ties down. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah.
I was never really fond of Doctor Strange design.
Okay. It's a very complicated design.
Yeah, very complicated, and kind of never... It kind of didn't seem one thing or another. It was kind of just a bit...
Yeah.
There. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, much like that character, it's pretty out there, wasn't it? All sorts of things going on. You're going to see a lot more of him soon, I'd imagine.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I am as well.
I think that might actually be a film that I see in 3D.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's got to be worth it, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. It'll probably give me a nosebleed, and I'll probably hemorrhage internally.
Maybe a controversial point, but someone pointed out like the fact of why the villains essentially always drawn or made like they're deformed, because someone was saying like the bad guy in the Doctor Strange. I'm not sure who the character's going to be. Mads Mikkelsen's playing and all these kind of faces burnt up. I think it might be Dormammu.
Yeah,
I think the idea is he's being burnt out from within. And I think that kind of goes back to an old thing, societal thing, or human thing of when you see kind of rightly or wrongly deformity or something wrong with a person, the instant sort of thing is to judge them as being there's something wrong with them. Obviously, we'd be kind of more enlightened than that now. But certainly, like in previous comic book work, you would see someone who is physically deformed as being a bad guy, like especially that goes way back from old serials and old comic books. Would you say so? I mean, we're moving past that.
I think so. Even those sort of even the color schemes, red and blue is a good chance you're gonna be a hero, green and purple you're gonna be a bad guy. That's the classic, you know, in the simplest terms. It doesn't work for everyone, of course. That's not, because obviously the Hulk is green and purple. Yeah. But, you know, if you take it on majority, especially like the earlier stuff, that's where it works. Okay, Which villain do you think, which is your favourite design villain? You don't have to give a backstory or whatever, just one you like.
Interesting. Ooh.
I would have to say Doctor Doom is my favourite.
Quality. That's a really good one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a good shout. Oh, I'm just thinking about it now. Red Skull. I'm going Red Skull.
Oh,
yeah, like that. Brilliant. Simple but vicious. Yeah.
Nice. Dan?
You've really got me.
I was never. The thing is, I was never a massive fan of DC. You know, obviously, I'm more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy. But you know, I wasn't a massive fan of a lot of DC's villains. Outside of Batman, I wasn't. You know, not many of them really.
I'll tell you what, generally. Crossbones.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what, that is completely Dan Butcher. Now that you said it, that is, isn't it?
That's actually your alter ego. So that is quite good.
Yeah.
Can I? I might.
It's sort of the black and white Punisher kind of.
Thanos.
Thanos, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Magneto.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many. Yeah, and I do really like that. Remember that helmet? I'm thinking, what the fuck is that? When I was a kid, looking at Magneto's helmet, you know, before people started taking their hats off and stuff.
Yeah.
What is the fuck is that?
If I was to say a DC one, I'd say Two-Face. That's me.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then again, you could say most of the Batman villains gallery, couldn't you?
Yeah.
You say it's fair to say the DC kind of designs were a bit lackluster to Marvel, and then they kind of caught up.
Yeah.
Not relatively recently, but kind of.
It's hard to say, you know.
I don't know.
But,
okay.
There you go. Well, I mean, thank you for everyone. Thank you to everyone who's who gave us.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I think we'll have a part two of that, you know, because it's. Even I'm sitting here thinking, oh, Red Tornado, oh, Hawkman. You know, there's got to be a part two to this somehow. I think we'll extend this into another episode.
I'd love to see if Mark Lamont would come on. I'm sure he'd have a lot of valid opinions.
Yeah, because he's designed a few, hasn't he, now? So he did the new Human Torch Shield costume, and, you know, he's done quite a few things now. He designed the new Killraven costume as well, which is really cool.
Nice. And that's the second time he's been brought out this week. He'll be happy.
He will. There you go. First time, although it implied he was a prostitute. But I think he'll be happy with that too.
That's right. He's still got to pay Palace the money for being mentioned.
I think it was a bit mean to him earlier in the episode as well, weren't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And I have to say, we've had a little sneak peek at his Star Wars issue.
That's fantastic.
Oh, God,
fucking hell.
It's ridiculous.
I saw the pencils and I thought, these are ridiculously good. And then when the colours put on top, it's just like, fucking hell. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, by the time you hear this, it'll be out. Go and buy it, because it's fucking incredible. It's
brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
The only bad thing about it is he's doing it digitally, because I'd have bought a page and then become a millionaire in a couple of years. You know, it's like one of those sorts, isn't it?
You was mentioning that in the last episode, about the page no longer being sold.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting one. Yeah. I would to weigh in and say the ability to work digital and work faster and quicker maybe outweighs the monetary loss.
Yeah, that's how Mark sees it, actually. He was telling me about it. I asked him about it, yeah. I really liked the page he did in the Fantastic Four, and I got him to print it out for me. Because I thought, I've never... You know what I mean? I suppose there is the alternative. I was talking to him about this, of, like, inking over. You know, you could actually ink a page.
Yeah.
You know, if someone wanted it, you know, you could say, well, I'll print it out, as people do now. You know, they print... It's in and out of the computer, isn't it? A page sometimes.
If you printed out on a decent quality paper and then, like, the artist worked over it with, like, a grey marker, add in tone and volume.
Or just inking it, even, you know.
Yeah, or just inking it, yeah. I would. That's great.
Yeah,
up
that, definitely. Yeah. Cool.
There you go. Now, thank you to everyone that got in touch. I think Tony's got a good idea. I think we'll have to visit this topic again.
Yeah, it feels like we barely scratched the surface on that one.
It really does, doesn't it? Yeah.
We've talked about the classics and what would work and what wouldn't work. Likewise, to anyone out there that looks at any of my stuff, I hope my character designs work for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you've totally answered this before, mate. You've got an iconic Saturday morning cartoon design to the Red Mask, which is really good. You know, it lends itself to that iconic image, doesn't it, to me?
Thank you.
I met you, I described it as a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
You know, turned to 11 or something, I think is the quote. Yeah.
The Red Mask can have, like, be dressed in any kind of clothing from the neck down, and it's the Red Mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the head's so iconic and it's there.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to do an armoured mask soon.
Yeah.
How do you mean it's
got to get segmented armoured mask?
Yeah, you've got to, like, do like an aliens type, you know, come here, you bitch, whatever that quote is, you know, with insult.
Come here, you bitch.
It's a stay away from her, you bitch. Not
oh, that's it. Whatever. Yeah. That's more. I was thinking of pornography again, wasn't I? Yeah.
Come here, you bitch.
Oh, dear. Dear God, come here, you bitch. Yeah. I'm going to think of that every time I watch Aliens now.
I like the fact you think of me every time you watch a movie. To see my little face floating into you, you know, it's like that's
being,
nice.
It's like being John Malkovich, but like Tony Esmond everywhere. Oh, dear. Anyway. Thank you for that,
should we
gents.
Briefly touch on the other topic we had lined up?
What was the other topic?
Sure.
Leave that for another time.
Let's leave that for another time. I think okay. I think it's a topic that we can discuss with a couple of our upcoming guests to see what they think as well.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to tell the listeners what it is, or
yeah.
We're basically I retweeted something which went a little it didn't really go viral, but it got people interactive on Facebook. I retweeted something by Jim Kersey at Oversimplified. He simply said, "It seems to me, as comic-making folk, we need to find a way to get our stuff in front of people who aren't also making comics."
Yeah.
Now, that is a simple, strong statement. One we've heard before on this show from Mr. James.
We've all mentioned it, I think. Yeah, it's a good point, really. Yeah.
We talked about it quite a bit when Jamie Smart was on the episode.
He mentioned it, yeah.
And there's been a few people that have talked about it and given their opinions on the Facebook, and thank you very much for that. I think this is the sort of topic that can be ongoing. I think we can, you know, ask different creators, see what they think is a good way to get out to new audiences. So I'm not going to read out the whole Facebook conversation. That's what I'm telling you. but everyone that did reply to that they're all brilliant answers. So
yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah, we're going to eat ourselves soon.
Yeah,
like pop will eat itself. Comics will eat themselves soon. We need to get out there, don't we?
Yeah.
Especially small press.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's nothing like quite like getting out there.
Mm. Oh, here we go. The segue coming.
And
yeah.
it's like I step up to take a penalty and then someone whistles at the right wrong time and I kick it over.
If you're thinking of getting out there, we've got a few events coming up.
Yes.
Tony.
Exactly. Yeah, Tony, what events have we got coming up, my friend? not Melksham, because that was in the past.
Oh, yeah, we've done that, haven't we? Oh, I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like that, what you were wearing.
I loved it, but what Tony did at the end of Saturday was a disgrace. Dan
to humanity.
Exactly. Yeah. Dan had to record this show standing up because it chafed so much.
Yeah. I just whipped down a big shit on the table.
Oh dear. Anyway, Tony, what
have we... comic review for you.
What have we got coming up, Tony?
Okay, the 1st of September is the launch of The Mighty One by Steve McManus at Orbital, 7:30 PM, 8 Great Newport Street. There's a signing and a talk afterwards. He was the Mr. McManus was the editor of 2000 AD. And this is during some bits, very high points and a couple of low points, and also stuff like Battle and Action, stuff like that. Very interesting. And it's also the last event at Orbital that the mighty Chris Thompson will be hosting. I had a chat with Chris yesterday. Good top bloke, Chris. Really good bloke. Shame to see him go. He won't tell me where he's going, but I think by the time this has come out, he might have told everyone. So, yeah, wish him well. The 3rd of September to the 4th of September between 10 AM and 5 PM is Nice. Back at the Corn Exchange in Bedford, nicecon.co.uk for your tickets. At it will be Steve Dillon, Matt Hollingsworth, Jamie Delano, Simon Bisley, John Wagner, Esad Ribic, David Hine, who is not Jamie Delano, although I did introduce him to someone at Thought Bubble as Jamie Delano, and Addy Granoff, and that's a bit embarrassing. On the 8th of September, 7 PM, is the launch party for Hilda and the Stone Forest, which we reviewed last week. And that's going to be at Gosh, 1 Berwick Street, Soho. I've not mentioned it yet, boys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I've not mentioned it yet, boys, but I'm going to be doing an interview with Luke Pearson, the creator, at that event. And we'll probably stick that out in a couple of weeks' time.
Nice.
Yeah, and he'll be doing a little talk and a signing as well at Gosh. I'm really looking forward to that. I got contacted by the good people at Nobrow today. The 10th of September is Ice at 10 AM That's at the Studio Venue Company, 7 Cannon Street, Birmingham. If you go to smallzone.co.uk for Mr. Shane Chebsey and buy your tickets there, at that will be Lou Stringer, who's always a good chat. We chatted to him at Bristol. Good lad. Declan Shalvey, Duncan Fredgrado, who is one of the funniest people I know. And although his interview that we tried to do with him was just him taking the piss out of me, is one of my favourite ones. Carl Potts, Charlie Adlard, Lawrence Campbell, who's killing it as well, Phil Winslade, Sean Phillips and Pete Milligan. That's the 10th of September. So that's just, there's loads more coming up. Just that's the ones for the next month or so. So I'll probably be at a couple of them, as we all will be. So you might see it there. There you go, that's it.
Nice. Awesome. Now, before we go any further, shall we skip the recommendations? Because we did rant a bit.
if you like. Yeah, mine's a very quick one, but yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, totally up to you. Yeah.
Do a quick one. Quick one.
We've got to do the shout outs yet as well, haven't we? Because I've got to do that.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was just thinking
running long.
I've got a quick one that I can just recommend.
Me too. Mine's a very quick one.
I've already talked
about
mine, haven't I? Fucking 100 times. So.
Yeah. you can just say that Tony talked about it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I might mention that. We've already mentioned the nice email, haven't we? Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, we got any shout outs, gents?
I've just got the one. Michael Phoenix, who is listening to the show and a good egg and is always chiming in on the Twitter and we have a chat with him. He has a Kickstarter at the moment, Gods of Men. The Earth has endured the reign of past superhero, the Sentinel, for 10 years, but the time has finally come to fight back. 7 days to go on this, so by the time you hear this, it'll only be a couple of days to go on it. He could do with a boot up. So have a look at that. The art looks really nice, actually. I'm just looking at it now. Yeah, and a lovely cover from Mythic Press. So if you go to Kickstarter and look for the project Gods of Men, you'll find it. Yeah, that's my one.
I'll put in on that, I think.
Yeah, it looks great.
To do that tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Nice. Have you got any shout-outs now?
Only a quick one. I just found a great load of webcomics on spiderforest.com. Literally came to my attention like a week ago, and there's like dozens and dozens on there. So go check that out. If you need a webcomic fix.
Yeah, I think I'll need to read some more soon. I think can't afford to keep buying all these bloody comics. Well,
I imagine we'd be spending a few quid in at a Melksham.
We will be, especially if they had the back issues like they had last year.
Yeah.
I loaded the boot up with them. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say it will be a cracking event, but it was. We spent lots of money at that event. I think that's safe enough, isn't it?
Yeah, and we'll have a microphone as well, so come and have a chat if you've got a new book out.
It's pointless, Tony, it's pointless saying that because this has come out
afterwards. Oh, yeah, fuck.
But there will be a show coming out soon with some interviews on the day.
That were brilliant.
Yeah, it'll be another special with some great creators and probably us just talking nonsense.
Embarrassing ourselves.
Yeah. But there's one place that never embarrasses itself. That is a place to hang your cape. Yes, our good friends at AP2HYC, they're the place to go whenever you want reviews, articles, interviews, everything about comics with capes and beyond. There's quite a few TV shenanigans going on involving our favourite super friends. And AP2HYC is always there to cover it and give good reviews and interviews about things. And also, we're working on some stuff with them, aren't we, Dan?
We are indeed.
Yeah. Yep. Plus... They've always support the show and they have a little awesome comics podcast page. So you've got to love that, haven't you?
Cool.
Yeah. There you go. AB2HYC. If you read your comics digitally, then go to pipedreamcomics.co.uk. They shout out about Small Press Comics that if you can't make it to any of these conventions where all these small press people are, they also, a lot of them do have their comics online to get digitally. Much like Dan and Comixology, making the big bucks on Comixology. Pipe Dream Comics talk about the latest that Comixology submit, interviews with great creators, and one with me that you can find on the website currently. I actually sound like I know what I'm talking about. What a load of smoke and mirrors that was. But where would we be in this world, Dan? I mean, it was hard enough not having you here on the last show, Dan.
All right.
Yeah, we'd be lost in a void of darkness.
A void of
sexy
darkness.
Yeah.
Sexy darkness.
Hands probing every orifice.
Yeah. And
Unfortunately, we don't have that because we've got Down the Tubes.
Hey!
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for saving that. DownTheTubes.net. Fighting the good fight for comics everywhere, British comics and beyond. Tony, what's going on at the moment there?
Yeah, it's loads of good stuff going up. John's put a big thing up about Action, the British weekly comic, not the American monthly. And there's loads of behind-the-scenes stuff about Hookjaw, Dredger, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's really good stuff. I think it comes from a site that's now gone down, but John's got the rights to put the stuff up and had a chat with the creator. And, yeah, lovely stuff. And also, from last week's show, that went up today is the Hilda piece and the 100 Times piece, which has got some examples of the art in it. And there's a few pages, preview pages of the Hilda new book, which look lovely, really, really lovely. So go and have a look at that.
Awesome. Three sites that we recommend you check out. Speaking of recommendations, Tony, what would you like to recommend to our listeners?
Right, I think we're doing quickies this week, aren't we?
We are. Yeah. We always do quickies.
Yeah. Because we fucking ranted on something rotten. I'm going to go a little bit off reservation. I'm going to go with a Valiant book. Anyone who pays attention to anything I say, which is probably nobody, knows I'm tearing my way through and catching up on all the Valiant books and absolutely loving them. Absolutely. Bloodshot, X-Man of War, Eternal Warrior, Unity, you name it, I'm reading it at the moment. And I'm up to date with Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. Issue 10 came out last week, I think it was, and it's the final issue in the series called Labyrinth. It is absolutely gorgeous. It is written by Robert Venditti, but the art in this is probably the high point for me, is Raoul Allen and Patricia Martin. There's an art assist by David Astruga and additional colours by Borgia Pinada. Letters by Patricia Martin. I won't ruin it for you, but it's the Eternal Warrior, who is almost immortal. If you know his history, you'll know he's almost immortal. And he keeps dying, and he wakes up in his equivalent of heaven, where he's with his family and his wife and his kids. And then he's brought back to life in this, and he's caught up in a maze, in this sort of torture maze that he can't escape from. And he's being held. I won't ruin who's holding him there, but you discover as the series, the four issues go on, what is happening. And this is one big talking fight scene that is just so well imagined. Absolutely beautiful stuff. And a friend of our show, a celebrity friend of ours, will shortly be doing the covers for Eternal Warrior. And I've seen a couple of pages of it, and they look amazing. Eternal Warrior is absolutely brilliant. Talk about simple iconic costumes. This Eternal Warrior is one of them, I've got to say. Yeah. Anything by, if you, I'm, as I've said before, I'm slightly disillusioned with DC, and I openly refer to Valiant as my now DC comics, because iconic characters, very well told, and they've got a sort of interlocking history that is easy to catch up on because they haven't been going that long. Yeah, well worth a look at the moment, Valiant, and really real quality writers, real quality artists. Yeah, there you go, that's my one.
Amazing. Dan, your recommendation for this week is almost an echo of something Tony's talked about. What would you like to recommend?
Well, I've mentioned it already, 100 Times by Kate Fleming, E. Kerr. I read it a couple of days ago. It's a really great book. It's kind of not the type of book I would just really pick up because I'm not a big manga-like fan, but this is really touching and really kind of heartfelt. It's really... really good book. Tony put a review up for it today. It was absolutely spot on.
Thanks, man.
As always, Tony manages to kind of observe things. He's very perceptive and see things that I didn't really get. But upon pointing it out, I was like, yeah, that's really well done.
Just so everyone knows.
The subsequent
knows,
email was really, yeah.
The Go thing on. That Tony mentioned, anyone who listened to last week's show, Tony mentioned there was something that hinted at in this book that it was... in his opinion, was very well done, and it talked about a certain subject. And we got a confirmation on the email that was exactly what it was. So,
yeah, it was really a really nice reaction to the way we talked about it. And I was a bit worried. I have to say, a bit worried that I was maybe, because I'm not a gay man. I don't know whether I have the right to talk about HIV in that way. And I mentioned it, and I was a bit worried that I was maybe stretching, and I was seeing something that, you know, perhaps coming from a straight man's point of view, I shouldn't perhaps see, but she confirmed that was the tablets he was taking was a commentary and a reflection of what's going on in the real world around the HIV virus. And I was so pleased, and she came back with it. She sent us probably one of the nicest emails we've ever had, didn't she? We were very chuffed about
really
it.
Really appreciate it.
Really did.
So that's a great book, and I think that's a couple of creators that to look out for.
Yeah, the last line of my email back to her says, please, please, please let us know what you got bubbling, because we'd love to see the next thing you bring out. Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Yeah. So there you go. It's been recommended in the, for the past 2 weeks. That's how much you got.
There you go. That's not bad, is it?
Yeah. My recommendation for this week was one I picked up at Nottingham last year, actually, on my bargain binge that I always do when I get away from my table. If you like the work of Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt, you'll know those from the wonderful Sixth Gun, which is just such a good series.
Ridiculous, pretty good. Yeah, Dave Stokes is part of that. I think Dave Stokes has done a bit of that, hasn't he? And he's a great artist, Dave.
Oh, God, yeah. The thing that they did before that, I believe they did it before that, was a series called The Damned, and I picked up the collected book of that by Oni Press. It's basically Prohibition era gangsters. It's like Boardwalk Empire meets something demonic, because it is that classic detective, someone trying to find out, like, there's a murder and there's a guy that's being brought back from the dead, and there are people, instead of trading like alcohol, they're trading immortal souls. So there's gangsters that are full on demons. The designs are just amazing. So it clearly is an underworld that no one else sees in the dark. And this is it's just a fantastic book. I mean, I'm halfway through it at the moment. It was one of those books that sat on the shelf for ages, and you know when you chew your bottom lip thinking, oh, I need to start that at some point. I can't wait to start that. It's black and white. The artwork is just beautiful. Stuff, the designs of the creatures. There is a page that's the last page of chapter 2, and there it's a splash page with this sort of worm-like creature that's got eyes all over its body, just coiling around these sort of drain pipes. And I remember when I first got this book, I tweeted that picture and just sort of said, I think I'm going to enjoy this book. And that whole build-up to that story and what that creature says at that point is just pitch perfection. Yeah, I just absolutely love it. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know how easily available it is. I think I looked on Amazon, and it was one of those ones that you can't... I think you might have to search a little bit to get a decently priced version of it. Nice little... it's a little bit smaller than American comic book size. I don't know what they call that. You know when they're slightly bigger than A5?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Nice little collection, black and white. Just beautiful stuff. It's a very macabre story. And if you like that sort of pulpy gangster type stuff and your horror, this is definitely not for you. And like it says on the back, sometimes the only person you can trust is a dead man, because the main character is someone who died recently. So there you go. Yeah, that was my one. Check that one out. And I've been meaning to talk about that for a couple of weeks. So what a jam-packed show this one has been.
Yeah.
You know, see, even when it's just the three of us, we've got something to talk about.
It would never stop.
Old Starblazer and Leviathan.
Yeah, what about you?
Stanley. Yeah.
Stanley. Wow, Excelsior!
Yeah. Actually, you might as well just call it Excelsior. Anyway, what am I talking about? Thank you for listening to this show, folks. Let us know what you think of the designs that you like and you don't like, because, like I say, we're going to revisit this. So stay tuned, because we might give another shout out to you. There's several different ways you can get in touch with us. Email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Any events or books coming out soon, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. It's going to be worth going there just to see that filthy cosmic boy. And likewise, if you see that post and if you see another character design that is worse than that in your opinion, post it.
Please let us know. Yeah, we'd love that. Yeah. Let's start a little thing where worst character designs you post.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not be cruel, but let's just have a little.
Let's have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
So, and thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. It helps get the word out about the show and pushes us into the ears of fresh new people. Because this podcast, much like a lot of small press comics, lives and dies on the people that are spreading the word. about it. Yeah. So, you know, and we love you guys that listen to us. We genuinely do.
Yeah. So, yeah, every time we get a message in about, oh, I listen to this and like this bit, we love it, don't we? We're
yeah,
mad for
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And we've met so many nice people because of this show, and we're like, we're just thankful for
and
it.
A couple of horrible people.
Yeah, it's true. But that's just you two.
I'm looking forward to see what happens to Jen Gilblad's sandwich this weekend. That's going to be my favourite thing.
We're going to interview her. You know that. Well,
we've got to do an interview. The interview
will be appearing in a couple of days, folks. So look out for the special soon.
Why don't we go and interview her in the toilet where it happened? And we
it's a ladies' toilet.
Well, it's not the first time we've been in the ladies, is it, to be honest with you?
Not here, Tony. Not now. Not like this. Sorry, mate. Yes, thank you for listening to us, whether it was on Stitcher or the Podnose Network. Thank you very much. Gents, where can people find us online?
Ezohyz is my Twitter handle. That's what you call it. Or you can find me at starblazerforever.com.
Dan, where can they find you, Leviathan?
On Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
There you go.
Vanguard.
Why is your penis not called Vanguard?
Yeah, why not?
I think it's a bit too obvious.
Yeah, that's not like us, is it? Let's face it.
No. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Jester Diablo. If you want to find more about my comic, The Red Mask, go to theredmaskfrommars.com. And we've said it a million times, but thank you for listening, folks. It's been a fun one.
Yeah.
It's been a fun one this week.
It has been. Yeah. Bit of a filler.
Yeah.
We'll have a guest next week, you promise.
It's all killer, no filler, Tony. Come on, it's always killer, not filler.
Is it? Okay.
I'm really
looking forward to Melksham, even though it's already happened when you listen to this.
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That dance you did was brilliant.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The splits bit, I'm still feeling that.
The Cosmic Boy cosplay, Dan, was spectacular.
I can't believe he fit into it, Vince.
Oh, touche.
My Jessica Rabbit was brilliant.
Is that what you call it? As you can tell, folks, this is devolving into chaos, so we better sign off. Have a brilliant week. Enjoy the special coming soon in the next few days. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have an amazing week and stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
In character.
I was just about to go there, you
asshole. What was it? Yeah, that was it. You put his voice on. You go, why do you always put that voice on when you imitate me?
Because he always goes, right, get in character.